And we're working on the second part to get done in a few months. But we believe you're important. Everyone has a purpose. Everyone matters. God wants to do some things in your life, for your life, through your life, that your life can be a life of significance, not only where God matters in your life, but you matter, make a difference to others. God wants to use who you are, your talents, your gifts, your experiences, and the things we don't like to talk about. God wants to use our failures. How many's had any failures in life? Not just our successes, but our failures. God wants to use all that so we can make a difference in this life and other people's lives. So we're glad you're here. Enjoy this morning. Going to ask Glenn to come, our men's ministry director. And let's just enjoy ourselves today. And we're glad you're here. We really are.
Guys, good morning. In just a couple of moments, I'm going to ask Dave Armstrong from Man in the Mirror to come up. But before I do, this is a really great crowd. This is our best ever event. We've grown this from probably about 50 or 60 guys meeting together to now official registered attendance was somewhere around 170. I know we're going to be a little light. The weather has kind of worked to be a bit of a disadvantage to us. But I really hope that you feel welcomed. Make it a point to get to know a couple of new guys by name. Introduce yourself. Take that bold step. Before I call Dave, I just want to tell you a couple of things about what we do here. We are very authentic, very honest people. If you look around this crowd, you're going to see, wow, quite a mixed bag, honestly. I mean, we're everything from the suit and tie type to the biker type, guys that work with our hands, guys that work at computers all day long. And yet we share this in common, that on the inside we have so much that is the same. Beneath all that facade that we put out there for the world to see, for our friends to see, we're still at times insecure on the inside, still at times concerned. We want to portray that we're all that and then some. And yet when we're alone with our thoughts at night, we know that sometimes we're not all that. We're not even half that. And we never want anyone to know that. This is a place where you can be who you really are. And I want you to hear that. I want you to understand that. Because until we can be real about who we are, we can't ever become the guys that we would like to be. The guys that John talked about that sense that they have a purpose. They have a reason for living. They have a value in life. And they have a destiny that they feel God has called them to. But none of that is possible so long as you pretend in front of other people to be somebody that you really aren't. So throughout this morning, I'd encourage you, if this is awkward for you, take a few tentative first steps to be genuine, to be real. Later on this morning, you're going to hear from a man who just shared with me this morning, right before he's ready to talk, and he says, you know, and I know I'm kind of putting him on the spot, but it's okay. He said, you know, I'm not sure if I'm ready for this. I'm not sure if I'm ready to say this because I feel like I don't have it all together in my own life. And isn't that the point? Because none of us wants to really hear from somebody who has it all together. Because all that does is remind us of how much we don't have it all together. And if anything, we dislike the guy because he looks like something we could never be. I encourage people to be who they are because in that we find hope for our own lives. That we see, hey, this guy was here and now he's just one step further along. And we think to ourselves, I could do that. We'll talk more on that. I know you're hungry. I'm sure that's the primary thing that you're thinking about right now. Before we do that, I'm going to call Dave Armstrong from Man in the Mirror to come up, introduce himself, tell you a little bit about his story.
Thank you, Glenn. Good morning. My name is Dave Armstrong. I am an area director with a group called Man in the Mirror. And we are a national men's ministry located, headquartered in Orlando, Florida. And after the last several days of some ridiculously cold weather, I kind of wish I was there this morning. Aside from the fact that I've been missing out on this group. And it is awesome to see this number of men gather together on a Saturday morning for a spiritual purpose and, of course, to eat some breakfast. It's good to be with you. My job at Man in the Mirror is simply this. I help churches to help their men succeed. I'm not talking about climbing the corporate ladder. I'm not talking about making lots of money or whatever our society defines as success. Because there are a lot of people that are succeeding in their careers, but they're failing in life. They're failing at their marriage. They're failing at raising their kids. They're failing at finding satisfaction in their job, failing at understanding what the meaning and purpose of life is. Tony Evans puts it this way. He says, success is not what you have done compared to what others have done. Success is what you have done compared to what you were supposed to do. And by that definition, guys, we are to be men. Real men. God's men. But the sad truth is there are a lot of guys that are failing at that. Now, I can say that on good authority because I'm one of them. I was married for 20 years, had three kids, was involved in my church. I was one of the leaders in the church. On the outside, I looked pretty good. I had the respect of a lot of people. But on the inside, there were some things that weren't quite right with my walk with God. And I was making a series of small little compromises in my life that led me down to the road of one great big compromise. I had an affair. And when that was discovered, as a result of my own hardness of heart and my own foolishness, it cost me my marriage. It almost cost me the relationship with my children. And it even cost me my job. Because you see, I was the pastor of that church. I wandered around for a few years, wasn't walking with the Lord, but I found that God never stopped loving me, never stopped caring about me, never stopped pursuing me. And God, in His grace, finally got a hold of me, and one day I repented of my sin, confessed it before God. He forgave me. He's healing that hardened heart, and He's in the process still of restoring me. And I thank God for that. And I can just humbly stand before you this morning and say that by the grace of God and only by the grace of God, I'm seeking to be the man that God has called me to be, God's man. Don't do it perfectly, but I'm seeking to be that. Now, if we're supposed to be God's men, we can't do that without God's power. It takes a change of heart. It takes God getting a hold of us. God transforming us from the inside out. But the reality is there are a whole lot of men in our churches today that need that kind of transformation. They're living lukewarm, shallow, somewhat defeated lives. They've been around church enough to get inoculated against Christianity, but not enough to catch the disease, if you know what I mean. And our desire at Man in the Mirror is to see our churches full. See, this church, my church, churches all throughout this area that are full of men who love the Lord God with all of their heart, soul, mind, and strength, who are fully devoted to Jesus Christ, and who can't help as a result of that but to love their wives and to love their kids, who want to serve God and want to serve their church and help their church to do and be what God intends it to be. So that's an awesome thing. Our role at Man in the Mirror is simply this, to help every church to disciple every man so that every man will be what he is supposed to be, God's man by the power of God. We have a goal that we believe God has laid upon the hearts of Man in the Mirror, and it is this. It is to see 10 million men all across this nation of ours living powerfully transformed lives, lives transformed by Jesus Christ, and to see that by 2020. It's an awesome goal. It's a big goal. It's a God goal. And we're praying that God will allow us to accomplish that goal. And we're putting feet to those prayers. For Man in the Mirror is placing area directors all across this country, 330 of them. One man for every 1,000 churches to help churches help their men become real men, God's men. And I'm excited about what God's going to do. My area is right here, Upper Bucks, Montgomery County. And I'm excited about what God's going to do in our area, in the hearts and lives of men. And I look across this room this morning, and I see all of you guys, and it's awesome. I see the potential that is here. Every one of you, the potential to succeed at what matters most, and And that's to be God's man by the power of God and to experience that kind of a transformed life. And I would encourage you, I would challenge you to take those steps to be God's man. There's no other place to be. I thank you for the opportunity of being here this morning. It's a real privilege to share with you for just a few minutes. I trust God's blessing upon you. I hope you guys at Morningstar understand what you have here. Beyond the facility, this kind of a ministry to men, not every church has this. I hope you appreciate Glenn. He can be a tough guy, but for all of his toughness, he loves every single one of you guys. And it's my desire to see the dynamic that's going on here with your men, to see this kind of dynamic reproduced in churches all across this area, hundreds of them, so that we see men living for God. It'll change our churches. It'll change our society. And I just thank you so much for allowing me to share that with you. So God bless. Trust you have a great morning.
Okay, so about the business of food. There was one common refrain last year that I heard about food, and that was that by the time I got there, there wasn't enough. And here's the deal. It's not that there really wasn't enough. It's that some of you, how shall I put this, you helped yourself to the abundance of that food. So if you are the first table dismissed to eat, and you are number one in the line, would you remember that there are, give or take, about 159 people behind you that will also like a slice or two of bacon? So I'm going to dismiss you. Before I do that, let's all just pray. Father, we do give you thanks for the opportunity to get together, to be real, to be honest, to be authentic men, to live in the light of your presence, to live in the warmth of each other's fellowship. So we just give you honor, we give you thanks. Pray that every man here senses your blessing in your presence today. Amen. So we're going to start with, Bob, do you have a plan for this? Okay, fine. We're going to start with a table on the left and a table on the right. Find the left door, I guess. Go out the left door, come back in the right door. Try not to run into anybody. When the Kool-Aid was passed out and it came in 8-ounce little cups and everybody drank a cup, there's these rare few guys who, like, took the serving pitcher and swilled it down. And they're totally over the top. They're not relatable. You can't connect to them. They're just odd. It was strange enough to give up an hour and a half on a Sunday morning and try to get your family and go to church because it would make the wife happy. But it's just plain goofy to come out another night of the week or another morning of the week and say, I'd like to spend time with other men. So what is that all about? And maybe that's your understanding of church, or maybe it's been your understanding of church, and I will guarantee you that in one form or another, if it's not your understanding of church, it's the understanding that a lot of the men that you know have about church. And I know this for a very simple reason, because I will ask people to show up at an event that we do. I will ask people to show up at a study that we do. And you know that glazed over look that people get? The one that they get just before they give you an excuse? The one while they're thinking about the excuse for why they can't possibly be there that day? You get a lot of that. Because guys just truly don't understand what church is all about. Let's come back to that bold statement. I believe that every man needs a good local church and a good local church men's ministry. So either I'm flat out wrong, or we've misunderstood church. I'm going to give you another bold statement. We need to roll some slides there. There we go. This one I'm going to borrow. I'm going to borrow it from Bill Hybels. And he has the nerve to say that the local church is the hope of the world. So what I'd like you to do for a moment is put those two thoughts together. Every man needs a good local church, and the local church is the hope of the world. And yet, and I'm pretty sure I'm not wrong, most men think of church the way I just described it. What does Hybels mean when he says that the local church is the hope of the world? And I'm going to read the full quotation here. It says, "The hope of the world is not government or academia or business, but the church. Because it is to the church that God has entrusted the message of salvation, which truly changes people's lives and hearts." Anybody remember back to the 2008 presidential campaign? The Obama campaign? There was a single word that captured the essence of their pitch to voters. Hope. With a little Obama O in the middle of the word hope, hope was it. People flocked to that. They believed in hope, and what they were saying, I mean, it's very clear what people were saying with their vote was, we believe, in spite of all the things that we have said, in spite of all the ways in which government has failed us in the past, we believe that government can provide hope. And it's not that government is not important. I want you to understand that. We're not saying that government is not important, but people placed all their faith and trust in what the government could do for them. Education is not bad. But have you ever heard the statement made that if we just could educate more people, that there'd be less violence, there'd be less problem, there'd be less difficulties in the world? And people really flock to education as a means to fix the world's problems. Let's come back to Hybels' statement. This is a very powerful statement. The hope of the world. You know, it's got to be something pretty powerful to be the hope of the world. And he says he's pretty convinced it's not government. I think you and I can say with certainty today that government is not necessarily the hope of the world. It's just failed us. There's nothing wrong with government. We're not criticizing government. We're just saying that government doesn't innately have the capacity to provide the hope we're looking for. Education alone doesn't have the hope we're looking for to change the world. And finally, he says business. And business is important. And business gives opportunity. Business provides income. Business is a means of hope. Just for fun, let's put two of these together. Let's put a good education and a business mind together, right? Isn't that the source of the most recent economic collapse? What happens when you put a room full of smart business people together? Who knows what they're liable to conjure up next? So if that is not the hope of the world, and Hybels says, no, it's not. But he bores down on one simple thing. He says, but it is the church that has been entrusted with, given the obligation of communicating this message of what he calls salvation. But it's in that that we find hope. The hope is found in the fact that it changes lives, and out of that life change comes opportunity for things to be different. And so what he's really saying is change starts with individuals, not with institutions or organizations. But what is that salvation message? And I think here's where we get hung up. Because so many of us have heard a salvation message which just doesn't seem to have any connection to practical life or everyday living. As a matter of fact, very often when you hear the word salvation, those of you who are outside of common church culture, it's really one of those negative sort of subwords that goes along with what we'll call the religious right and the fanatics and these weird people that say weird things and talk strange language, and it's them over there. And they somehow have this belief about salvation, and it doesn't really seem to, as a matter of fact, it seems to be another problem in the world. Not a solution. Certainly not hope. For those of you who are in our Saturday morning group, the next several minutes is going to be review for you. It's okay. You can use the review. I've heard how well you answer the questions that I ask a week later and see if you remember what we talked about last week. So you can all use the review, believe me. So what I'd like to do for the next couple of moments is describe for you what I believe Hybels means, and I've studied his material for a long time. I'm very well acquainted with what he teaches, and I know what he believes at heart, and I fully endorse it. And what he's saying is that the message of the gospel is really what offers hope. And salvation is the first component of the message of the gospel.
So here is what I believe Hybels is saying. And this provides the explanation for why I believe, why he believes, the church is the hope of the world. And why every man then needs a good local church. The first invitation of the gospel is the opportunity for every human being to have an individual relationship with the God of the universe. Now that's pretty profound if you think about it. A God who self-describes as the God of, and this goes way back in human history, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Why does God describe himself that way? Because God knows individuals by name. He relates to them personally, and he cares about them individually. And that is the invitation that he offers to us, to have individual relationship. Not broad picture relationship. Not God is too busy. God doesn't understand my problems. God doesn't get me because after all, he's got a universe to run. God is the God, describes himself as the God of individual human beings. A God who furthermore describes himself as a father to the fatherless. A God who in New Testament language describes himself as the father who is looking out for his kids who aren't at home, who is watching for the kids who are straying. A God who really cares about us, knows us personally, and is very interested in our lives. We need to stop there and say that this relationship is not the default setting of humans. You know, on your computer, there's certain default settings. And if you want to undo the default setting, you have to take the initiative to undo the default setting. The default situation, the default relationship between God and man is that it is not natural. It does not exist. And we need to take some action. God has already done his part. We need to take some action to make that relationship possible. So if that's the first message, the invitation to have a relationship with God, the second component of the gospel message is that we get the privilege of having an entire new family. That the moment that I become God's kid, I become part of a whole family of people, men and women, kids, who are also God's kids. Maybe the idea of family scares you. You know, maybe it reminds you of like those goofy Thanksgiving dinners where the strange aunts and the goofy uncles show up. But this is actually, when it works well, an amazing family. And I'm not going to pretend that there aren't dysfunctions in this family. There are. I'm not going to pretend that there aren't times when we as family wound each other, because we do. But we learn how to do it better. And over time, we practice and we improve and we get better at loving and caring for each other. And when it works right, there is absolutely no other family on the face of the earth that works as well as God's kids when they really care about each other. Maybe you can start to feel the hope. The first promise of hope is individual change in relationship with a God. A God who promises to know you and connect with you and relate to you. The second component of that change becomes then we get a family that we can care about and cares for us. Cares for us even when we're jerks, even when we're idiots, even when we're selfish. Chases after us when it works right. And then there's finally the third component of the gospel message. And these are inextricably connected. You cannot divorce one from the other. This is the gospel message, front to back, beginning to end, that Jesus communicated to people when he was here on earth. The third component of that gospel message is that we become citizens of a new government. Citizens of, as Jesus put it in the language of his day, a new kingdom. And we don't use the word kingdom today. But what it says is that we become members of a government that does things extremely differently. Think about some of the words that Jesus used. Love your enemies. Take care of the disenfranchised. Seek justice for the people who on whom injustice is being perpetrated. And he calls us as God's kids and citizens of this new country, this new government, to be actively engaged in that. As a matter of fact, we really can't be good citizens unless we are actively engaged, not just in family, but in helping to provide justice and remediation for problems that exist in the world at large. That's our mission. Now does hope seem possible? The church is the institution that can provide hope because hope starts with each of us. Hope moves from each of us to all of us in community. And finally, when community works together, hope moves out into the world and provides personalized, individual solutions for the broken, the needy, the frustrated, the down and out in the world. And out of that comes real hope. I guess it's time I check my notes again, huh? All right. I made a two-part statement. The first was that every man needs a good local church. And a good local church is essentially, let's stop for a moment, and I need to clarify that because I didn't do a good enough job of clarifying that. In the beginning, I told you that church is something that a lot of people think of as a place to go. Or maybe you think of it as an organization. But in fact, what church really is us. So the solution, the hope, is not in an institution. It's not in a place. But we are the church, literally, we. There is no church except for us. All the rest of this is facility that we, the church, use on mission. That's all that all of this here is. It is a tool that we, the church, use in order to effectively accomplish mission. Let's move on to why I believe every man needs a good men's ministry. Because it's one thing to talk about this in theory, but everything in this gospel message that we have talked about is relational. Let me camp on that for a moment. Any gospel message that you hear that is not relational, where there is not a thread of connection run from beginning to end, is not an authentic gospel message. Everything about the gospel is relational in nature. And so in order for us to live into the potential that we have in this message, we need to be relational beings. So the guy who says, and maybe I'm talking about some of you here this morning, but the guy who says, it's just God and me, we're pretty tight, and I don't need anybody else, he really doesn't understand the gospel, because if the gospel is relational, and the only thing that you're having a relationship with is you're trying to have a relationship with God, here's what you're saying. You're saying all the rest of God's kids that God cares about, they're not really important to me. And all the rest of the opportunities in the world that God says are what he cares about, they're not important to me. So what you're really saying is the God that you say is important to you, everything that is important to him is not important to you. So how really impactful is that relationship in your life if everything that God cares about is not important to you? Like imagine, let's look at it like this. Would your wife think that you really cared about her if absolutely nothing that she cared about was important to you? So it is impossible for us to live out this gospel without being in connection to each other. So I want to very quickly move through some benefits of men's ministry. The first of them is wisdom. That when we expose ourselves to the wisdom, the intergenerational, the multi-generational wisdom that comes from God's kids sitting down together, and especially guys sitting down together, older men, younger men, sharing their life, the older men saying, well, here's the way it works. The young guy, he looks out at the road ahead of him, and he sees the crest of the hill, and he says, I think I know what's over that hill. And he plans his life based on him thinking that he understands what's 5 or 10 years ahead of him. And he's got this projection in his mind, I think I know what this is, and I'm good with it. But the older guy says, no, I've been over the crest of the hill, and I've seen what's over there. And it doesn't look like you think it looks like. And you don't really understand the challenges you're going to face. And so the older guy comes alongside the younger guy and he says, look, this is how it kind of usually plays out. And you can take my advice. You don't have to take my advice. And wisdom is shared. It is not pounded into people. And so we make the offering to people. Would you like to be around me? Would you like to learn the few things that I've learned over the years? This is so important that I want to take one more moment to clarify this. I drive a lot as part of what I do in selling. Now, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but it's like sometimes there's these places where I'll see a spot on the other side of the interstate road, and I think to myself, I want to stop there. And I want to stop there before I forget and drive 80 miles down the road, and I forget about it. and there's an exit right up the road. And I'm just going to get off that exit 2 miles up the road. I'm going to loop around, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to stop at that place. And I get off at that exit, and it's another freeway. Has this ever happened to you? And it's another 5 miles up that road to that exit. And I swear this has happened to me more than once. And you get off that exit, and it puts you onto some other limited access road. And it's like, before you know it, you're 25 miles in one direction just for a simple 2 mile U-turn. And you ask yourself, can I even find my way back to where I wanted to go? And is it worth getting back there? All right, that's a cute story, and it wastes a half an hour of my life or an hour of my life. But what happens if we're talking about your life, not a simple U-turn? What happens if we're talking about, I think I know how to get there, but I don't? Have you ever found yourself in life so far adrift of where you headed out to that you don't even know if you could ever get back on course and ever get back to where you wanted? That's why we need each other. And that's why in community we can find wisdom to help each other. Point number two. Men's ministry provides for us a means where we can grow in friendships. I'm not even going to bother to ask if any of you has had friends that took you in the wrong direction. Because I'll guarantee you that there are people who have. Friends can either be your greatest blessing or your worst curse. And the problem is sometimes you can't sort out the difference. When we as men meet together and we agree that we're living by a certain set of values, that I can start to open up to some of you and you to me because we kind of trust that we are each interested in the other. You know, most men are good at building acquaintances, the casual sort of relationship, the pat on the back kind of thing, the let's go hunting or fishing or whatever it is. And they talk about stuff, you know, stuff, baseball, games, the kind of stuff that guys like to talk about at church because they really want to avoid talking about the stuff that's actually going on in their lives. But everybody needs a few people with whom they can talk about the stuff that is actually going on in their lives. A third component, another benefit, is that in this relational community, our struggle to find an identity can be realized. And let me tell you how this works. Guys are growing up. And it's kind of like going to the superstore. I'm going to pick a little bit of my identity from this aisle and a little bit from over here. And I want to be like this. And I want to be known as that. And I want to be the jock, or I want to be the stud, or I want to be the ladies' man, or I want to be tough, and I want to be whatever it is. And you're 18 and you're pretending that this doesn't happen, but yes, it does. And you know it does. And once that is inside of you, you spend the rest of your life living toward the internal identity that you have created for yourself. That's how gang members get killed. This is who I want to be. This is who I am. I don't back down from a fight. I don't do this. I do that. You know, your identity can take you to places you never wanted to go. Your identity can destroy you. Or your internal identity can be a guide that takes you through the rest of your life. But if the friends that you have are taking you in the wrong direction and affirming the wrong identity, you will end up places you just didn't want to go. Number four. We need a place where we can talk about God. A place where we can discover God. I put it like this. Men have many ideas about God. A lot of inaccurate information. You know, everything from God doesn't exist to I'm not sure there might be some God to there may be many gods to whatever it is. They have many misunderstandings about God. Within church family, over a period of time, we can unpack for people what it is that God is really like. We can swap stories about the things that God does in our individual lives. The God that we don't quite understand, and we're not sure how things work. And it's like one of those windows. John did a series a while ago about windows. And a window actually is kind of like this little portal between two worlds. There's a wall and you can't see anything. And the window is this one piece, this one place between two worlds where you can kind of get a glimpse between the two. And when we come together and we start to share our lives and we see what God is doing in each of us, I get a better appreciation for who God is, how God is, what God does, when I hear a little bit about your story. Jason, I'm going to be ready for you. The next benefit to being in community, we have already talked about a little bit this morning. And it's the fact that every one of us has struggles. Every one of us has life issues. Every one of us has fears and uncertainties. Some of us here in this room are maybe struggling with addictions. Things that you want no one to know. And we need to have a safe haven where we can come and talk about that, where we can be honest and real about the difficulties that are going on in our life. And I'm going to ask Jason to come and just share with you a few words from his own life.
Boyfriends of my mother's. Me and my mother settled in a neighborhood called Tacony in the city of Philadelphia. My mother always had a Jekyll and Hyde approach towards parenting. Every time I was in trouble, Hyde would give me the worst punishment, and then Jekyll would come to comfort me afterwards. That worked well into my teen years, when all I wanted to do was run the streets. It was not easy for me growing up. My older brother had a bit of a reputation in the... bit of a reputation in Tacony. And with him being incarcerated most of the time, I had to deal with unresolved problems with people. I started out fighting for my life, but in the end, it was always fighting with respect from other men. We all have stories, some bad, some good. More importantly, it's ours to change. In October of 2011, I made a decision to change my life. I overdosed on prescription pills for the second time. And I totally gave up on life. The next day, I had nowhere to go, and I went to rehab. I did 30 days in two different facilities. I began to realize I didn't want to continue in my addiction. When I came home, I wanted to stay sober, but there was still something missing from my life. My wife had been invited to Morningstar Fellowship by a friend of hers, so I joined her one day for service. At first, it was too overwhelming for me, but I gave it another chance. On Easter Sunday, 2012, I completely turned my life over to God, and my life was changed forever. I began coming to men's group and making friends at church. I never had any real male friends in my life that were actually there for me and cared about my feelings and wanted to be my true friend. I was finding it all too real that there was plenty of people in this world like that and at Morningstar Fellowship. I met men who didn't judge me or acted like they were better than me. Men I did not need to impress. And I could be myself around and they accepted me for just the way I was. I was intimidated at first because I didn't know much about the Bible. But these men have taught me so much and they are continuing to teach me the Word of God and how to apply it in my life. I see my whole family building relationships here that are unbreakable. I need men's ministry in my life. It has certainly helped to change my life and continues to help me improve as I work to be a good father and a good husband. It can also change yours. That's pretty much all I have. I'm sorry, I'm so nervous right now. I'm shaking. I've never spoken in front of a group of anybody. So, thank you.
Underneath a little case of the jitters, there's a genuine guy. And that's precisely why we do this stuff. And I actually chose Jason because I've had the chance to sit down with him, meet him, talk with him, learn a little bit more about his history. And let me tell you, there's history there. There's brokenness, there's hurt, there's pain, and so maybe he's like the poster boy in certain respects for the broken life, and I mean that in no way as disrespect, but actually as kind of like encouragement for a turnaround that's possible. For the way this hope of the God, see, that's it. That's why we do this stuff. Because this actually does provide hope. It does provide change. the broken and dysfunctional family of origin doesn't have to forever lock you into a fate of second-class citizenship. We do this because this stuff works. All right, number six. I have this thing, and I'm just calling it satisfaction deficit disorder. It's like we all know as guys what we think is going to make us happy. And I'm not necessarily even talking about the midlife crisis, you know, the girlfriend in the red convertible thing. I'm not even thinking about that. But we run after all this stuff that we really think, and I'm not even accusing the advertising media or culture, and I'm not even blaming them. We just think we know what's going to make us happy, and we run after it. We spend years chasing it. And in the end, I'm not going to say it's not fun. There's some fun along the way. It's pretty cool while we got it. The stuff is neat. But in the end, it's like, did it matter? And you don't have the courage to say that when you're with other people, because after all, you'd feel like an idiot if you just said, I've spent $50,000 on this car and it really doesn't matter. That would make you a really dumb person. So you never say that, so you pretend that you're happy, and all the while on the inside, maybe not so much. We need the fellowship of other people. Because see, if all I've ever known is what I think will make me happy and it doesn't, where am I going to find any insight in what could bring me satisfaction? We need each other. I'm going to lump number 7 and 8 together, marriage and kids. About marriage, I like to say this. We all know how to get married. That's a pretty easy event. This business of being married is altogether different. Over on that side of the room, there's a contingent from a church in Coopersburg. It's kind of like a nation unto itself that's over there. It's my kind of like home church for a number of years. And there was a couple there that was really passionate about marriage stuff. And I got to say that this is part of my story, that some of the stuff that they did kept me in the game, kept me in the hunt, kept me working at keeping a marriage alive, because marriage for me has never been an easy process. I'm told that I could be difficult to live with. I find that hard to believe, but apparently it's true. Let's move on to kids. And again, we're pretty good at making them. That's the fun part. We're not so good at taking care of them and being engaged in their lives and knowing what to do afterwards. And again, I can say part of the story of my own life is the church has provided for me, and especially the church that I used to be in, the church from the nation over there. They helped me through some of those struggles. I'm telling you, I just felt inadequate to the task. And I was tempted to give up a lot of times. Now that I'm thinking about it, my son is sitting over there. I wonder what he's taking out of this right now. Poor guy. But you know what? The wisdom of being with other people who had been down the road longer and had had difficult situations to deal with or uncertainties to deal with, the wisdom of other men who had been further along in their parenting experience was invaluable to me. That's something that we offer here when we get together. None of us knows how to do this perfectly. Purpose, I think we've talked about, but this is one of the things that we get from coming into fellowship with each other, and we see what God's doing in other people's lives. And we look into our own life, and maybe we realize for the first time, I don't know what my purpose is. I suspect it's possible to go through most of your life and never even think that you had a purpose. To take it for granted that life was what it is, and after all, that you just got through it, and then that was it. And then you meet some people who actually are kind of like on mission, and they have a purpose. And it seems like every morning, apart from the fact that they get up because they have bills to pay, they actually get up because they want to get up because they feel their life matters to other people. When we're together, we can explore that. I think this next one, number 10, is huge. I think there's so many men out there that carry a load of guilt and burden and shame, and it's like they never reveal it to anyone, but they just wish somebody would tell them that they could have a fresh start. They wish somebody would look them in the face and say, I don't care what you've done, you're okay. Because I think when men, a lot of men are alone with themselves, they really don't like themselves. They pretend they're okay, but on the inside, maybe not so much at all. Maybe they find it extremely difficult to live with themselves and who they are. In this community that we call the church, we can look each other in the face and say, I care about you, and I'm going to be willing to take a risk on you, and I'm going to love you. And we can rebuild that person on the inside. I got two more points, and we're done. The next one is that when we come into community, we give guys an opportunity to explore a story that helps to make sense out of the world, because the world is this really confusing place, honestly. We've got all this really cool beauty and marvelous stuff, and at the same time, we've got all this pain and brokenness and agony. We've got Grand Canyon type things going on right next to mass killings in schools. And we struggle to make sense out of all this. And I want to tell you that the gospel message, fully understood, actually helps to make sense out of the world that we see around us. It's not always pretty. Frankly, it's kind of ugly. But it helps us to understand what it is out there, and it also gives us a promise of what is to come. And finally, a good men's ministry provides a brotherhood where we work together, we serve together, we do things together. Dave Lynch is out there in the audience, and he just got back from Honduras. He put together a team, not by himself, but he put together a group of people. They went to Honduras, and in about a week's time, it's pretty incredible actually, they put up a church. Ready for this? Local church. To do what? To bring hope to another part of the world, because we believe the local church really is the hope of the world. And so the local church here, serving together, shoulder to shoulder, go to another place in the world. And they start to establish another little haven, another little oasis of hope in another spot in the world. And that's something we get to do together. That's pretty cool. So finally, I'm done. And some of you are saying, and that's okay. But what do you do with this? So I want to say three things. If you've heard something you'd like to talk about, we meet here every Saturday. If you've heard something you'd like to talk about, I'll be wandering around. There's some other guys. Larry is here somewhere. I don't know where Larry is, but Larry is here somewhere. I'm sure Larry would be happy to talk with you. Larry, put your hand up so everybody can see you. There you go. You know, if you'd like to talk more about something you've heard, you're intrigued, you've never heard this before, and you want to find out more about it, let's talk. If you don't have a good church, you're welcome here. I want to be very clear, though. If you do have a good church, stay there. If you have a church that needs some work, stay there. I'm not telling you to defect. The last thing that we need is people running from one church to another. What we need is people staying in their family and trying to work with their family as long as they can, as best they can. So I'm not asking for church shoppers or church hoppers. But if you have no church, you're always welcome here. Guys, I'd like to pray. I'd like to thank you for coming out. And if some of you can stick around and help us turn this back into a worship center instead of a breakfast center, that would be greatly appreciated. Father, I want to thank you for just showing up here this morning to fellowship with us, to be with us. Thank you for the fact that you are that relational God that knows us by name, cares about our circumstances, and knows us so well, and that you want to walk with us through the rest of our lives. So God, we love you. We express our devotion to you. God, I pray that every man leaves here with something that he can carry with him for the rest of the week.